Eden Cause here with Just Be, and we are about to take a spiritual boom. We are at an unprecedented time in human history where we are transitioning from 3D to 5D within the great spiritual awakening. This video and audio podcast is the place for you to find your truth beyond politics, your sovereignty, your voice. Let's kick up your vibration now. By the way, each episode ends with the Just Be practice to do just that. P.S. Just to know a little bit more about me, I'm a psychological empath, meditation master, dimensional healer, all the things to help you within this ascension. To learn more about me, visit me at EdenJustBe.com. And let's get this party started. Eden, Just Be, spiritual boom in association with the Grassroots Warrior Network. Angela, big welcome to you. We're going to start talking in just a second. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
Yay. And where are you actually now?
Right now, I am sitting in Townsend, Montana. I live in Billings, but yeah, I come and visit my guy friend, Brian, often.
There you go, Brian. Okay, she knows I'm going to talk a little bit here to start us out with. We are in a sacred economy together, which is how we met. So I am connected to her, so we know each other personally. Yet what I love about the podcast is I really get to dive into her and who she is. So I'm really excited about that and to share that with you guys. All right, couple blurbs before I read Angela's bio. Angela. All right. So I have been reiterating every week, hash 1 to 3 times a week. I think that is still ideal. And I'm going to keep talking about that. And then in terms of seeing at least one person with the heart, like really seeing them every week, I want to report mine. So I got to do this today as I was at Goodwill giving some items out. So the two guys that came to help me, really seeing them, talking about the weather. And then I had a dinner with some of my neighbors this week. And when you go out with me, I don't know about you, Angie, but it's just not the surface conversation. It's this, hey, tell me about you. What's going on in your life? And everybody has a turn. And it's funny to see people get uncomfortable sometimes. Like, oh my gosh, she wants to know what's going on with me. Because I really do. So that was fun. Okay, let's go into you now. Get my handy dandy pair. Oh, and by the way, I do have a tank top on. We talked about this before I came on air. Like sometimes I shift and you can't quite see it. So yeah, tank top and then red shirt so it doesn't go all the way down. Mom of 3 adult children, 7 grands, Angela McMaster is entering the most exciting phase of life yet, full of adventure and discovery of both the world and herself. She resonates with Alaska, having climbed glacial waterfalls. She strives to operate less from future projecting, more from being fully present in every moment, offering grace whenever possible, and holding space for others' processes, even if that means her moments with them may come to an end. She believes that love expressed in the fullest, is one of her greatest callings and gifts, one of the ways her light as a light worker heals. Ways to the Divine have honored her to bless others as an accountability coach and safe house manager for sex trafficked and exploited women, as well as a cranial sacral therapy practitioner. And she is in the midst of adding death doula to her modalities, a gift she's known that she had since childhood. Yet there was some religious interference or interventions that thwarted that. That's very meaty. So she and I talked offline for a minute because y'all know typically my first question is, how did you start seeing the Great Awakening? And for Angie, it's because of so many things that happened from my understanding in your life. Do you mind starting out and telling us about what religion you were born into and how that affected you?
It was Assembly of God, a very charismatic, evangelical. I always sensed, I refer to it as a cult now, but I always, even as a teenager, felt I would constantly challenge my parents, do you serve God or do you serve man? Because the pastor, I couldn't go to my prom, I couldn't go to all the things, and I knew I loved God. I knew I loved God, and I knew there were hardcore boundaries I had that I didn't want to do. I didn't want to have intercourse as young and outside of marriage. I had goals of my own, but I ended up throwing them all out the window because just out of rebellion due to feeling I will not follow this man's rules.
So give me a little update. Did you have siblings? What was your family like?
One younger brother.
Okay.
Yeah, just one.
And when you threw it all away, how did that look or what happened?
It was gradual. Because I couldn't totally turn my back on like God as a whole, but I was just lost in as far as figuring out what is God to me versus what I've been told every day of my life. So, it ended up just building until my 20s. My first husband was right out of high school. I got pregnant at my grad party. After, not at, during. It wasn't that.
Happy graduation!
After the party.
Oh, gosh.
And very religious parents, and had the, you know, I had to marry. And I knew it wasn't right. But
so had y'all been dating at all, or were you allowed to date anyone?
We had been dating, but I had broken up. I saw signs of abuse tendencies, and we were only married 11 months, and I left him 4 times in that 11 months. And my last day with him was 12 hours of things I have never repeated to anyone. So, yeah.
Okay. So what happened from there? So y'all separated and you had the baby?
I did.
With yourself, or did y'all co-parent, or?
I had to. What happened to me, as long as nothing had happened to her, I couldn't use it against him. And so he had full 50-50 parental rights, and I would get a week with her. And in that week I was sane and calm. And then the week I had to give her to him, I drank a lot and partied, and just cause I couldn't bear that she was there.
And also knowing that you knew in depth about him and the experience that you'd had with him personally, whatever that was, knowing that it was really hard, that she, mm-hmm. being a female too, was going to be in that. How did that go?
It went actually well. His mom was around often and kept things in check, and he babied her, luckily, until she became a teenager. And my goal was to raise a very confident woman that has a strong voice, because I didn't feel like mine could be heard, you know, wasn't heard. And that challenged him a lot. They ended up in a 3-year period of not speaking due to an incident between them.
Okay. And I'm assuming that was probably good in a way. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what, go ahead.
She felt guilty because he did have 2 children with that's next wife, and felt like when she was there, he would stay in check and not harm them. It was
okay.
Good, but also hard for her.
Okay. And knowing you have 2 other children, and you've had some extreme, let's say, health conditions as well. Okay. How can you tell us about what happened next?
Yes. I met a year and a half later my second husband, and we had 2 children together, and a great marriage. It was a great marriage. I'm not just sugarcoating it and in denial. Like, I know the things that I contributed. I listed them off to him when he left, and the ways that I didn't. But I didn't. I wasn't the victim. And oh, you did. Why are you leaving? It was, here's what I know I didn't provide, and if I could do over, kind of thing. But we took in We were kind of the place the kids would come to in the neighborhood. And I typically fed a lot of kids every day. A lot of children that parents wouldn't really prefer. But I just, my heart was too big for them. And they respected our roof, our home, our family, as long as they were there. And I ended up facing uterine cancer in 2008. We were, had been married 15 years. Mm-hmm. And we had a 4-month wait period to find out if I had cancer or not. I did know I had masses and things, but opted not to have biopsy because I knew everything would be removed. And in the 4-month wait period, he was a dream. He would just know when I needed what and without saying, and I'd be doing dishes, hear the, him and the kids laughing in the living room, and it would just be like a hit of this is what their life could be like, you know, without me. And
how old were the kids at this point? Like 2008, how old were they?
They were 12 and a half and 14. And okay. My oldest was, had just gotten engaged.
Oh,
so there's a 5-year gap.
Okay. Angie, this is so interesting. When I went through my quote unquote cancer, mine, I have two, but they were 14 and 12. So this is,
this is
interesting. So yeah, I can completely understand that. All right. So, go tell us more.
So then, he was a dream until 2 weeks before the surgery. I came home to a note and his thing's gone. And he left without knowing whether I had cancer or not. That's when my son also dove into addiction. That was his first drink and first night doing drugs, as a way to cope with. Later on, he told me in the family sessions we had when he was in rehab that that night, all he could think, he couldn't get the thoughts of, is mom going to die and where's dad? So
what? Okay, so you had no knowledge that this was going to happen. You came home and were just like shocked.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even like those other kids that were from troubled homes were like, I'm never getting married. If you guys, if this happened to you too, I can't face love. I can't face the world. Like it affected so many
people
besides our core.
So what did you do?
I crumbled. I was a refinery wife. And so they sit you down in the beginning, like to welcome you, and they show movies and things of explosions and all this.
Okay, so refinery wife, what does that mean?
An oil refinery, BP refinery.
Oh, got it. Okay, so go through that again.
And
they sit you down.
They like prepare you for what you may face, like that knock on the door or the like, kind of like police, military, what there's these things that I relate to with. You don't sleep until you hear the car come. You know, they do shift work, alternating shifts and stuff. So
okay.
On the graveyards, I didn't sleep until I heard that car. As soon as I heard the wheels on the driveway, I'm out cold. Just, but reading that note was as if I had gotten that knock on the door.
No kidding. Yet he was the one that knocked. Oh my gosh. Okay. So you're 2 weeks in terms of, addressing the cancer more fully. Your kids are in the midst of you potentially dying. Their dad just, so he left the kids too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of us.
All right, so you fell
there
apart.
There was a period of time that we didn't hear from him, and I was like, you need to give face to face. You need to come say, hey, this is what's up. Like, you don't just peace out. The kids need to see you and hear this. I like you, especially with what I'm facing right now. When and it took a while for him to come around. I can't even remember that time frame, but it took him 18 months to file for divorce. I refused because I just knew it wasn't the right thing. I just knew it wasn't the right thing. And I was facing too much other. I didn't.
So what was his rationale for, like, he couldn't handle what was going on? What were the reasons?
He never really had a square on point reason, but he did have someone else right away. And his dad left him when he was 12. And I just feel like he couldn't handle the loss, the potential hearing that I do have cancer and me being taken is my theory, mm-hmm. but it's all just my own theory.
Okay. So what happened with all of that?
I went in and I made the mistake. I encourage women to always get your annuals, always get your annuals. I drilled it into my girls. I went 3 years without and had horrific cycles. And by the time I went in, my doctor was like, "You're facing some serious shit here." And I had masses on my left ovary and my uterus. I knew it was starting to look impregnated and feel kind of solid but painful. Mm-hmm. And I just knew something was going on. So when he left, I dove into prayer hardcore. It just is all I had. It was the breath and my Bible. I laid on my Bible a lot.
So literally laid on it.
Laid on it, sobbing. Yeah. Yeah. Just wanting to get as close to the divine as I could. And
so did that help you do that, even though it wasn't fun? I mean, was that one of getting back to having a connection with the divine? Did this help that?
It did. It helped me for my own without religion involved. Mm-hmm. I had always had a religion-based mm-hmm. sense. And this really helped, well, other than the healing gift I knew I had, but the religion shunned. And so I dove into my prayer. It's just, it was constant, a constant, constant. God was my constant and my kids. And I just, the night before my surgery, I knew I needed a waiver. God spoke to me and apparently spoke in the same voice loud enough that my doctor heard, and she appeared with the waiver. I had no idea what the waiver was about, but she had it. And it was, if everything was pink and healthy, that to remove it anyway. And it ended up being pink and healthy. The masses were gone, but the pathology came back that my uterus was full up to 3 months equivalent pregnant, full of stage one uterine cells that it was trying to keep in.
Inside.
It's a very, very progressive cancer, and it was just bulging, trying to keep them in.
So you got rid of your uterus.
If I hadn't signed that waiver.
Okay. She would have kept it.
She would have had to.
Right.
And the cancer would have. Continued. That was the first time it was intimate, me and the divine. Okay. Just.
Yeah, all right. So when you had it taken out, it was gone essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, looky there. Let me ask you this, and because I know you also had a bout with E. coli. How did you, in terms of knowing that you always had a gift, tell me about that. And what was it, the gift of working with death, the gift of just your heart? Yeah, please be more. Tell us more.
I think it's all the above. I had a chore. My brother and I, growing up, we would have to go get wood with my dad out in the woods. And he would chop it all and we would stack it in the truck. And I always would wander off and go walking in the woods and find a log to sit down on or some tree to lean against. And I mean, animals would just, a bunny with this, be limping and like come up to me and lean against my leg or whatever if I didn't move and touch. Yeah. Or birds, a bird would be gone like bonkers in this, like, and look like a hummingbird, but it's a big bird, and I could tell something was wrong with it, and it just crashed into me, and I'm like,
what?
And yes.
Wow.
And these things always happened, and I just felt like I couldn't tell anyone. And I would either pick them up, and I always held them to my heart. I wouldn't look at them and be all like a stuffed animal. Like I just would leave them alone, but hold them to my heart, and my hands would, like, I feel like light up and get buzzy and warm. And sometimes they would heal and run or fly away, but sometimes they would look at me and exhale and just, and die peacefully.
I have to interrupt here for a minute. So my recurring guest, P and Cullen, this is interesting too. They have been nose to nose with bears. So I have to connect you guys at some point. So yes, they would either heal or they would feel comfortable enough with you that this is my time to pass into another dimension.
And go in peace.
And you would not tell anybody about this?
No. I did finally at 7 hold... Because my friends, no one's talking about this. So, you know, when you don't hear anyone talking about it, you just kind of like, So I went to Sunday school and they wanted us to tell, go around the table and tell how either we showed God to someone else or how God presented himself to us. And I'm like, I can finally tell. And so I said, me and God healed the bunny. And it's silent and everybody's looking around like
shucks.
And I'm hauled off into this back room. They bring in deacons and adults, parents from the adult Sunday school class, and pray for Satan to remove his talons from my back.
And you're 7 and this went down. Were you shocked by that? Did you believe them for a little bit? Did you just know something wasn't right?
I was shocked. Oh. I knew what was happening. It, you know, they talk about those integral moments where you shift into a mature, like you're faced with something beyond the years of what you're, and you're able to digest it. It projects you. And I knew, I felt God in that moment inside of me, and I just let them do what they're doing. But it also instilled this, I hate this religion. The whole time I was like, I honestly felt the same way that I felt when I'd get spanked. You know, just
because you were essentially, you were being spanked, but it wasn't just spanked. I mean, you were told basically you are of Satan and Satan's in you. I mean, the worst thing that could be said about you in the church was being said, and multiple people, and you talked about a bunny. How after that happened? Did you show up to, how many times did you have to go to church, or did y'all go to church during the week?
Oh, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night for a regular church, youth group, any barbecue, any luncheon, anybody's baby shower at birthdays, we're all at the church.
How did you handle it from that significant point on?
I went and I played with my friends there, but I kept silent. I didn't ever, my gift went dormant. Mm-hmm. It just went dormant. Mm-hmm. I kind of went numb in a neutral place. I was functioning. I didn't withdraw too much to a point of depression or anything, but that has to not be a thing.
Right, because you can't talk about it. You can't. It just going to stuff it down.
It's too much for a 7-year-old to process. Like, you know.
Wow. Okay. Tell me if this is correct. I feel like jumping to the E. coli at this point. Is that a good stepping stone? All right. Tell us about that. What happened?
That I I did contract E. coli. I don't know where from. We never were able to identify the source. Organic food can be, is a very high risk, eating organic greens if we don't wash them properly, and most people don't. And I was very into eating that at the time, but it can also be grandbabies if they, you don't know where their hands have been and they're always wanting to play with their lips. And they're, it was like, I, when they said that, I was like, oh.
So how, what did that mean for you? What happened?
It took me, I faced 16 weeks of not being able to eat or drink solids. What happens is E. coli shuts down your bladder first. And so you just have no urine, no, you can't go. And then everything that you ingest will come out as blood through the colon. And I started noticing chunks of pink, which I knew was my intestine. And I lost down to 79 pounds in,
I'm sorry, keep opening my mouth. For those watching, my mouth keeps dropping. How, so how much were, did you weigh?
Before?
At your lowest point, how much were you?
Oh, 79.
You were 79 pounds. Okay. Ooh, okay. So not eating. Okay. I'm just digesting this in, not eating or drinking for 16 months.
Weeks.
Weeks. Weeks. Oh yeah. Weeks. Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
And that the 16 weeks period I referred to was just to finally get the that it's not being detected to the fatal degree, okay. Because we always have it in our system. It's part of our cleansing bacteria we need in there, mm-hmm. But it was obviously out of balance, and so yeah, things I question now are like, why wasn't I given a feeding tube? Or why? There's little questions I have now, but I through the time, I'm just trying to stay alive. But I got to the point, the 16th week, I knew I was dead, dying. Like I could feel my body go into the next phase, that everything felt just not even fatigued anymore, just going down, just they were shutting down. Mm-hmm. And that's what you die of, is what organ gives out first. The kidneys, or because E. coli burrows through your colon, hitches a ride on your red blood cells, and then gets off at either your brain, your heart, your kidneys, anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I felt it all shutting down, but mostly I ended up getting like asthma lungs, a little bit, but so I felt things shutting down. My doctor told me to have my family come in, say their goodbyes, and do that.
And do you mind telling us when this was?
This was October of
2015. Okay. And you had your other thing in 2008. Okay. All right. So, did your family come in? Yeah. What? And also, what does it feel like when things are shutting down? Like, is it?
It's hard to explain, but I just knew. I'm very in tune with my body too, and even other people's. Like when people would say, "How did you know to touch or rub there?" I can see and feel. It's a felt. A knowing, I can't describe, but to the cellular level. And I could just feel it. It's a different kind of tired, not a fatigue tired, just going to rest. But I knew it was a rest that's not recouping.
Okay, so obviously you recoup. So what went down?
Well, I... When my daughter brought my grandson in and put him on my stomach, I didn't want my kids to come and see me that way. And I didn't want the grandkids, the babies, to see me that way. And I didn't have a 7 yet at that time, but my oldest came anyway and put my grandson on my belly. And that was gut-wrenching. It was a gut-wrenching moment. And I kept myself in check until they left. And then when they left, I just anger. I was so, I had it out with God and was like, I just lost it. The nurses left the room afraid of being struck by lightning. But I just, I did. I was yelling. I wasn't quiet about it. I wasn't pretty about it. And I just said, if you want me, fucking take me.
Yeah.
Lay down your ice pick. Quit nitpicking me. Just one organ just at a time. Just do it already.
Yeah.
Don't make my kids watch this. And that, like, yeah. And immediately, as I'm in the middle of this, what I call bitch fit, this heat just went through my body, head to toe. And I'm like, really? Really?
So you felt it and you knew what was going on. Is that what you were doing? Like, okay, here we go. Instead of being like, oh, look at what's happening. You're like,
yay.
Seriously, really? Like, really? Is this going on? Okay.
You get me.
Whoa. So was it then kind of instantaneous like that? Just like within a couple minutes, you were fine, or what happened?
It was instantaneous that I knew. Okay. The other second thing that happened right before that was that the doctors had come in and hung a bag with a black X on it, which I knew is for transfusions. And I looked up at the nurse and I said, what are you doing with that? And she said, you need a transfusion. And I said, nobody talked to me about a transfusion. Who gave you permission to give me a transfusion? And she said, you need a transfusion to live. You will not live. And I said, you will not put a stranger's blood in my body. And she just looked at me. She said, I'm going to get the doctor. And I said, you get the whoever the hell you want to get. It's not going to change. This is my body. You do not enter my body with anything you don't have permission to enter my body with. I had been... I had been a transcriptionist, and I knew that you can have a reaction to blood like you do organs, called trolley. And when I read what happens to people who have that, I've told everybody, do not give me blood. Do not let me go. So yeah, the doctor came in and I told him the same thing. I'm like, you're not going to give me. And I knew I didn't need it. At that, I knew what had just happened. Also, I didn't say that. I didn't go into that with them. But I'm mm-hmm. like, if I go from not having blood, I go. That's my choice. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it took an hour to get them to leave me alone about the blood.
Yep.
Even in a moment like that, I just
right. Even with you saying no,
yes,
and clearly saying adamantly. No. Yep, it's crazy.
And to think what they would do if I was unconscious.
Mm-hmm. I would have given it to you.
Right.
Okay. So not accepting the blood. Yeah. Go proceed.
16 weeks was just to get the all clear a lab, but it was a 2-year recovery. Every time I went to eat, because I had developed this, I don't know what was going on in my esophagus and my respiratory tract, but every there's a little subtle breath you take right before a bite of food. I didn't know about that until I couldn't. Like every time I would go to take that bite and that breath would set off an asthmatic attack. And then I would choke on food. And so it took 2 years to be able to eat.
Wow.
I couldn't gain my weight back. My metabolism was all jacked up. But I was healed.
Okay. All right, dude.
To the sense that I knew I was going to live, but it was going to be hell.
Yes. Okay. And it's interesting. Again, we're going to parallel with you. It was 2 years for me to heal also. So all of these things had happened to you coming up in a very strict religion where when you talked about bunnies, it was you have Satan on you, then you had the uterine cancer, and then this, and you were healed. Like, God, oh my gosh, God. Okay. Now, okay, and in terms, okay, I'm going to go into the Great Awakening right now. Knowing that you've had all these major spiritual things happen to you, And then we have moved into this period of time now where a lot of people are waking up not only to, oh, I'm a spiritual person, but oh my God, aliens and the government is just, oh, look at that. And we're being so controlled. When did you start seeing that portion of things?
Okay, I credit my religion with allowing me the foundation to still grab onto the divine, to have a divine to grab onto, to
and like that's so nice because a lot of people that have your experience do not want right. anything to do with that. So that's pretty darn amazing.
Well, yeah. That was my first marriage, was why. That was when I went without, was the blackest, holiest, hellish time of my life, bar okay. none, even over the illnesses and all the things. It, okay. And that was my closest I came to denouncing God. I just was it shut off. I didn't say I hate you, I don't want you in my life, but I wasn't living as if I did.
Got it.
And so that moment of time always at least brought me back to, you know, we don't want to go there. And even when things were rough and bad, I credit my religion for at least introducing me to the divine, even if it was in a skewed way.
Mm-hmm. And I yeah. imagine that too, in terms of, like, you know, again, being born into, there's this way of thinking, there's this way of being with God, and you seeing that for you wasn't the way, also helping you to be a much more free thinker. Let me digest this myself, because I'm not just going to take it because you're telling me. I would like to think about it for myself. So you said exactly. Did that help with that also?
Absolutely. And then these intimate encounters are undeniable. I mean, from the young child experience with animals and knowing my gifts from a very young age, but then they're tamped down. Then God, just really, he and I having literal face to face and fist to fist, like knockout dragouts. And like, yeah, it started intimately, personally. But then my TBI in 2019 brought me in contact with craniosacral therapy.
Okay, and talk about that.
I was tripped by my daughter's dog reaching for a helmet out of his mouth. Right when I leapt and reached forward, he leapt and flipped me in the air, and I landed on concrete and set off my trigeminal nerve.
Okay.
And that is like electric control room of one of the electric centers of the brain. So I felt like I was being zapped a lot. I couldn't speak for a couple of years, like more than 2 or 3 words at a time. And my brain would just freeze. I couldn't get my mouth and brain to connect, and writing was out of the question.
Okay, woman, I got to stop for a moment. This is so much. This is a lot. Like, I'm sitting here with you going, holy smokes, Angie. Okay, yeah. Oh, and the fact that you are here today, and we're going to get to the death duel in a moment. Like, it feels like a perfect storm getting to that. Okay.
It does. It all.
Yes.
Comes home to the 7-year-old girl. Like, it just, it. She and I walk hand in hand daily now. Like, hand in hand daily. It's she and I. I was seeking out everything I could. My daughter found a craniosacral therapist. She's like, well, you got to try this. They felt responsible because it was their dog. And so they were trying to help me find any way they could, any therapy, and found this guy, Herman. And that's his given name. His name's Michael Reynolds, but in Bellingham, Washington. Love him. And the instant he put his hands on my head, I had relief. The inflammation just went, whoosh. It was like, when before, for months, all I could think of was make it stop. And I know why people do, why the suicide is so high now for TBI. I know why there are things that happen in there, and all it overrides thought. It overrides everything. Literally, all you want is make it. It's beyond a migraine.
I've experienced that too.
It's insanity. Mm-hmm. It really is insanity.
I can agree with that.
And so I felt that, but I also came in. I knew that's what I meant to do. I knew it was like both at once. It was like, I just wept and wept. Because I knew I came in contact with the outlet for my gifts and how peaceful an outlet and loving it was, and not shunned, it was going to be safe. And they encouraged me. He and his wife, both are practitioners, encouraged me to join the program. And
so did he end up being your teacher?
He did. Yeah. My mentor, teacher. Wow. And also who I go to Alaska with, because he goes up there. He's gone for 47 years, sells this and blankets and stuff. And I had to wear it.
Fabulous.
Yeah. So I go up there with them, and I'm a carny for three summers coming up now. I love it. It's just amazing. But yeah, it was therapy, because I was very hesitant to join. It's a very intimate. They don't like to have they like a small cohort at a time, because it's very in-depth and hands-on, and you grow. It's a transformational process. That was where I first came into contact with God as something else, and came in contact with the cosmos, came in contact with so much in the sessions I had throughout that.
Wow. Okay. So we're going to do the Just Be practice in a moment, because I can't believe we've almost come on our time. Now, okay. Now being led. Oh, we didn't even talk about sex trafficked women. Another time, yeah. Man. In terms of now, so you, from what I understand, I don't know if this has helped you on this path, but you've had two close people with you pass away.
Yes.
Did that open you up to this, or had you always thought about being a death doula before, and now this has brought you in? Did those come together at all?
I actually have struggled with the death part, except as a child I didn't. And then as an adult, I had a fiance and a best friend pass away from alcoholism, and almost my son briefly. But he didn't, thank God. But my fiance and best friend both died in alcohol withdrawal seizures. And it was very difficult, because both of them always said, like when we met and throughout the relationships, that my light brings them joy, that they feel calm and peace and all these things. And then when they passed, I'm like, well, how effective is my light if people die? Like, I really wrestled for the longest time with the death part, until recently. Brian introduced me to his cousin, who was, I'm going to say it, and I hope you don't get backlash, but COVID vax injured. And it is documented that the timing and the reaction, and he ended up with myasthenia gravis, which is a degeneration of the sheath around the nerves.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's feeling his nerves head to toe through his body. Oof. He ended up paralyzed, but could move some. He had movement, but it's the equivalent of paralysis if you can't hold your body weight, can't hold a cup, can't, and all that. So
and thank you for bringing that up. This is the place to bring that up.
Okay. Yeah, we had sessions together, not enough. I didn't get the intro soon enough for my heart, but divine timing is everything. But in the first session we had together, he spoke to me through tears and told me this is the least that he was struggling for words. So I do too, but that he felt he left his body in the session, and that he said he felt twofold pain-free for the first time in 2 years, and peace and calm. But he said, I came face to face with God. I know I came face to face with God in that session. And when he said it to me during the session, it meant one thing. But then since he passed, I've heard it. I feel him whisper it over me twice. Mm-hmm. He came to me and whispered it over, and it meant something different after he passed. And he was prepared. He was prepared to be face to face with God. And I know the times he said it to me after were to prepare me to help prepare others.
And is that what you would say a death doula does? Basically helps people cross over. Like you're kind of the facilitator, the mentor to help them feel comfortable with that or to ease them into the process? Thank you.
For them and for family. Yeah, it can be them and family, and it's compassionate. I don't know if it's so much. I always am more humble as far, and I don't mean that in an ego way. As far as I want to be, and not say I'm gonna guide them. I don't know what the path is. I don't know their path. Just a sojourn or a company.
Okay, so you're just going to show up and provide the space.
And how
is this different from hospice?
Actually, hospice is opening to partnering a lot with, because they can focus on the medical side of things, like a hospice nurse, and they do the same and give, but they often can't either schedule wise or it's not recommended that they bond to that degree with people. And some do. My mom was actually a home health nurse and there were people that they get in, you know, but I don't know the difference, except I don't have any medical association with them. It's all the compassion and friendship and, you know, in that time.
I volunteered for hospice about a year and a half. Again, it was such a caring group, one of the most caring groups I've been involved with. So I would imagine like partnering up with them, like it's the same thing. They can bring in the medical, and I think even the religious component is separate from them. But yeah, to be able to click with someone who's really not there just medically to ease you in the process. How, in terms of your study, what's left until you become official? I don't know if I'm wording it correctly.
Well, it's actually not very much. I was surprised when I looked into it. It's just a 6 week course. It can be 6 to 12 weeks, depending on the rate that you go. It's your own pace. Mm-hmm. And it's not a lot, especially with what I've had with cranio and other things too. It's not going to be much for me.
Nope. And I feel like you've been preparing for this your whole life. So there's a 6 weeks course to get you certified or whatever, but all the background is just so wonderful. Okay. We're going to go into the practice now, yet let me close this out and tell me if this is accurate, Angela. Knowing that you're getting certified, is it a certification process? Is that even the correct wording for it?
Yeah. I mean, it's not regulated right now.
Right.
So, but there is an organization that is kind of wanting to provide that for themselves. And so there is one that is well known that that's the one I'm going through.
Okay, interesting.
And you can do a little bit more in depth at the end, a little more testing and stuff, and get like badges to put on your logo if you have business cards and things, so that it just helps kind of be more validating in a way.
Okay. So all y'all watching and listening, we're recording this on February 10th, 2024, that potentially in March or April, you'll be good to go. So just putting you out there into the ethers, into if anybody ever wants to contact you, why don't y'all contact me and I will connect you to Angela. Or if at some point, if you have a website that comes up, or even if you want to leave me contact information, feel free if that's not too early. Well, do you want to do that or you just want to wait?
I don't have a website currently.
Okay.
And that I just have my email. But what's that?
We just switched and my little hand came up. That was so funny for those who are watching. Do you want to provide your email now or you just want to wait until this becomes more?
Sure, I do, because I can do distance cranio sessions also.
Okay. Well, let's say an email address. Do you mind saying it out loud?
Sure. It's I named it after the dog, Leaping Rook. LEAPINGROOK. Sorry.
Okay.
So Leaping Rook CST for craniosacral therapist.
At
Gmail.
Just be practice.
Whoa. Interesting story. And for your practice today, I understand you're just going to give us some of what you do.
Yeah. So one of the things I learned in craniosacral therapy, when I very first was going, I would mess up, get wrong. My words were just a jumble all the time. I felt like it was a bingo game. I never know what I'm going to pull out. And so I would refer and go, oh, there's my rook brain. Oh, that's my rook brain. And just trying to make light of it. I try to use humor in a lot of, sometimes it's darker with what I've gone through, but my therapist, Herman, he said, one day he said, okay, we have to put an end to this. And I said, and he said, your system feels, and it may feel like it's two separate systems from you, your cognitive, your conscious, but it's hearing you. Your brain wants to heal. Your brain wants to speak and do the things that you know and you remember it used to. That's why you're referring it to it this way. So let's support it. And let's support it by first not referring to it in that way anymore. And then second, why don't we just take a minute and kind of do a body scan? And so he had me close my eyes and just take a deep breath and kind of, you can visualize either laying down flat on a bed, on the ground, or sitting where you are. And you just visualize this like neon light, kind of doing like the chalk drawings in the movies, going around at any pace. If you need to go slow around your head and your face and over your shoulders. And if it's going fast, that's fine. Just try to track where it's lit up. And then if there are any areas where it's darker or not lighting up. And for me, in those times, it was often my brain, my head. And so you just say to yourself, okay, brain, I hear you. You're needing some support today. I want you to know I'm going to do everything I can to give you the best support that I can. And then you ask, where do I feel strength? Where do I feel strong? And it can be internal organ, if it's your heart. It can be, some days might just be your pinky. And you just say, okay, pinky or heart. Or if it's the rest of your body and just one area in need, you say, we're going to rally. Our brain needs help today. So let's support. Let's come on. And initially, I didn't really feel a response. I was so focused on the hurt and the pain in my head. But as you sit, you can start to feel the strong areas really warming. And that warmth can be sent to the other area that's in need. Maybe the heart's the area in need, and the physical body can be the one to support, which we don't think of in terms that way often. It's the physical body always doing all the work. Maybe the internal organs are doing all the work and the physical body's been in a lot of pain. Whatever it is for your case, you just find the strength and draw on that area to support the area in need. And then to close, one thing I always say in my scans, either before, sometimes before and after, is I am safe, I am healthy, I am whole, I am love, I am loved. And I say this to my clients before and many, 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 many times during their session. And I'm meaning it for myself and my system and for theirs. And then we come back.
I would like to tell of my experience because it was really, I didn't expect that. For the neon, for me, Angie, the part that needed it was my heart. And then the part of me that was strongest was also my heart. So it was really interesting parallel. And I was sitting there going, is my heart and my physical body, is that what's in need? And it was like, don't worry about the specifics. The strength is there, just balance it out. So that was really cool. And when you said the words at the end, I am loved, you are loved, that I think 5 or 6 statements, I just smiled. It was so great. One last question before we sign off. And when we sign off, I'd like for you and I to stay for just a second. I didn't even, because I know what cranial sacral therapy is, a lot of our listeners might not know what that is. Can you give a brief description of that?
It's a really difficult thing to describe, but...
it's awesome. I'll put it that way.
It is. The easiest way is aligning the balance of the central nervous system is kind of core to any thing you're facing, whether it's in your physical body, your emotional body, traumas, ailments, whatever it is. The system, you could walk into a happy birthday surprise party, or you can walk out of the shower and your husband or kid scares the crap out of you. Your system doesn't know the good happy birthday party from the fear. Mm-hmm. And it also, we don't really give that much attention to that reaction to physical sicknesses and things that have happened. And the body stores. And some people say, I've always had a bum shoulder, I've always had a bum elbow. And it could be how you came out of the birth canal. And every single thing you face since then, that's the magnet. And then you don't know, wow, I haven't even lifted. I've been taking it easy. I've been relaxing and the shoulder's bugging. Well, did you get in an argument with your significant other? Who knows?
Right.
You know, it's a balance, balancing the emotional, the physical, but starting always with the central nervous system is key. And that's a good practice too in everyday things I face. Your vagus nerve is a good place. And if you just hug yourself, you almost automatically, we're designed to the areas, the ways you would hug yourself, the roots of the vagus nerve, the path is where you're able to reach on your own body. And they're just kind of giving yourself time to relax, that can help you get through so much in a day, even more than just deep breaths.
Okay. So cranial is very much a hands-on. Yeah. Can you do
very
remote?
Very light touch. It's very light touch, but it's energetic. And so, yeah, especially if you have a one-on, if you can like do a quick video or even send a picture of someone and people can send a picture of their loved ones, having a face to give, but it's not necessary either. It's
okay, just so in person or remote.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. And just to add with that, I had a weekend class in cranial sacral. So I bring some of that into the work that I do. So I'm not a practitioner per se, but just feeling the pulses and the, like, even when I'm doing it, I don't say, oh, I'm doing cranial sacral right now. I just, it like, it's almost like Reiki. It just opens you up into,
it's very similar.
Oh my gosh. All right, honey. So fabulous. Thank you again for sharing your wonderful heart. I'm showing my heart. Beating heart. And it's so neat when all of your experiences come back around, basically showing this was meant to happen. Just trust the friggin' process.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Trust it. No matter how bad it looks, no matter how good it looks, if you have faith and you know that this is moving you to a beautiful time, just like this great awakening right now, that it's exciting, that again, we're having to face these things that just look ugly, yet somehow we have to trust it. All right, honey, I will see you in the loom. Hang on with me for just a second. See y'all later.
Bye.
Hey, I do this sometimes. We're going to come back for just a second because Angela made a really good point and I would like her to state what you were just telling me about. I think it's really important.
Okay. So, sometimes because I have faced so much and a lot, and I know I'm not alone in that. I want to say that first. I know I'm not unique that way, but I also can hesitate to relay the things because it can sound, oh, and then I had this and then I had that and then I faced this, and I don't want to sound one ego. I did this and I overcame that, and because I didn't, the divine has said, I need to be here is why I'm here. I want to state that, but also the importance of you face with, or I can't say you, I'll say me, when faced with each thing is the choice each time to be a victim to it and not, and I'm not saying, because I have been even by men at all the things, I've been abused in all the ways, so I'm not discrediting victimization. It is a thing, but it stops the moment it stops. And whether it continues to be your identifier is the choice from that moment on. The length of time it takes to get there is your own process. I'm not going to discredit anyone's process, but it's just big for me to not, one, sound like a victim, but also to just, the importance of the victim mindset is huge in healing. You can't recover from anything without facing that.
That's beautiful. And I'll just say this one statement, we'll sign off again, that coming, I believe, from the Great Awakening from 3D to 5D, this has to be confronted and to know on some level, also spiritually, that we signed up for all of this, the good, right, the bad, and the ugly. So in on a certain degree, we are responsible for all of it, even right, though, well, this happened to me and this person came into my life. Yet on some level, you as a spiritual person, as a soul, you chose this. So that's really hard for people. So Angela, thank you so much for bringing in that beautiful nugget. Thank you.
We chose it and we have to choose not to choose it going forward.
Beautifully put. Okay. We'll stop with that. All right. Thank you. Y'all find me on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, True Social, as well as Rumble, BitChute, YouTube, plus a plethora of other audio directories like Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So like, subscribe, do it all. See ya.